Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's been 100 years since the U.S. entered World War I. And now a little known story of that war comes to us from author Robert Gowdy. It's a compelling tale about the first fully integrated army of modern times. African Kaiser General Paul von Leto Vorbeck and the Great War in Africa, 1914 to 1918, is a true account about an unorthodox and undefeated German general. Author Robert Gowdy visited with Prairie Public's Doug Hamilton about his book, released by Penguin Random House in January.
Well, I'm a huge history buff. I'm fascinated by World War I, which was one of the great watershed events of the last 200 years. I have an interesting tale, I guess, as to how I came about writing it. Years ago, I was working in Hollywood. I also do some screenwriting and that sort of thing. And a film producer asked me to do some work for him, which I did. And then he asked me to write a film treatment about one of his ancestors, who was happened to be this character named von Lutau Vorbeck. Now, the film producer's name was Gregor von Bismarck.
Well, that's good. You know, the capital of North Dakota is named after Otto von Bismarck.
I do. In fact, my daughter just had that on a test in her geography class.
Good for her.
But, in fact, Gregor is the great-grandson of Otto. So it's funny because I met him at a pizza restaurant with another producer, actually the guy who directed The Bourne Identity. And so we're sitting there, and Gregor introduces himself. He says, "I'm Gregor Bismarck." And I said, "You're not related to the famous Reichschancellor, are you?" And the other producer sort of blanched and said, "Really?" That was my first thought. I thought, okay, guy named Bismarck, maybe he's related to Otto von Bismarck. And in fact, he was.
Well, this is a fascinating story because it's about an integrated African army during World War I. Now, had this been told before?
I mean, you know, yes, there have been volumes written, you know, in the past, but probably the most recent volume of note was in the 1980s. There was an excellent book called Battle for the Bundu written in the 60s. Von Lettow used to be a household name in Germany. He was sort of the only, you know, honorable German to emerge undefeated from World War I. But, you know, there's been a general movement in the West, if you will, to turn away from our history, I think. And he just got forgotten along with everyone else who's been forgotten.
Well, take us back 100 years ago to the time when Africa, at the time of World War I, was a collection of colonial states. Sort of set the scene for us.
Okay, so 1914, the eve of the Great War, as they called it, all of Africa, with the exception, I believe, of Ethiopia and Liberia, were European colonies. So between roughly 1880 and 1914 occurred what was called the Scramble for Africa, in which European nations, you know, vied for colonies in Africa. Now, Germany was a latecomer to the colonial race. Otto von Bismarck was opposed to colonies. He didn't think Germany needed colonies, but gradually, I guess, having colonies became the hip thing to do. So Bismarck allowed German adventurers to carve out chunks of Africa. So by 1914, Germany has German East Africa, which is now Tanzania, Burundi, and Rwanda, and German Southwest Africa, which is now Namibia, and a couple other little pieces, the German Cameroons and Togo. Togoland. So, in any case, the war is about to break out. All the major powers in Europe have signed a treaty in the 1880s, agreeing that if war were to break out between them and Europe, they would not involve their African colonies.
And yet,
that lasted about 2 weeks.
Yeah. So, how actively was the war prosecuted in Africa?
It was a huge campaign. Hundreds of thousands died. I mean, it wasn't on the vast, horrific scale of the Western Front, but it was a major area of the war.
So was this just European interests fighting against each other, or were there issues worth fighting for the populations that lived there, the black Africans?
Well, I mean, good question. It was Europeans fighting Europeans using black African troops.
Yeah, okay.
And by and large, now the South Africans, being proponents of apartheid, had their armies were entirely white. But in German East Africa, in British East Africa, which is right across the border, which is now Kenya, it ended up being a war of European officers commanding hardened and, bush-savvy African soldiers. The Germans were the first to recognize the fighting quality of the African soldiers.
So I guess strategically, though, this sounds like the interest here is German forces tying down British forces, basically giving them a fight in Africa so they can't go someplace else and fight.
Yes. Well, so into this cradle, if you will, right before the war starts, walks von Lütow. He is a career German officer. He has the best possible education for a soldier of his day. He had participated in the Boxer Rebellion in China. He had participated in a horrible war of suppression in Herero Land, which is in German Southwest Africa, in 1904. So he's aware of all the necessities of bush fighting and aware that it's not like fighting a war in Europe. He actually has a great interest in African culture. He quickly learns Swahili. He loves and admires the African people. And interestingly, at this time, and this is a strange thing to consider given subsequent history, but at this time, the Germans are the most enlightened colonial administrators in Africa.
Well, I did a little reading on General Paul von Lütow, and apparently he didn't like fighting against the guerrillas in China during the Boxer Rebellion, and maybe he learned something from that.
Well, the thing he learned in China was the importance of logistics. And any soldier, and I'm an armchair general, I'm not a military person, but any soldier will tell you that logistics is 50% of the battle. Mastering, is there enough food? Is there enough ammunition? Where do you get your next box of shells from? Where do you, et cetera. In Southwest Africa, which was a brutal guerrilla war in which large German armies were tied down and almost defeated by, literally handfuls of native African soldiers, the Herero tribesmen and the Hottentot tribesmen. Von Lütow, he was wounded there. He was in that conflict, realized that you have to fight with the landscape. You have to use the resources on hand. I mean, the way the Germans did it in 1904 was they started building a railroad from the coast to the areas of where the fight was happening, which would take months or years, and that's how they got their supplies, from the coast, from Germany. It was just, it wasn't working. So he actually famously did these, if you will, exit interviews with captured guerrillas, and almost alone amongst the German officers there was very interested. How did you do it? How did you guys manage? The Germans eventually won through rather brutal tactics with which he was not involved, but he wanted to know how they did it.
Was he affected by those brutal tactics? It was almost genocide, wasn't it?
I mean, in German Southwest Africa, 1904, 1907, the word genocide has been used. But I think, that's with hindsight. At the time, it was a bitter guerrilla war, and guerrilla wars are brutal. The Hereros, for example, were famous for mutilating German soldiers, on the battlefield. They would send their women, very much like the Apaches in the United States. They would send the war women out in the aftermath of battle. They would cut off the genitals of the soldiers and their hands and all this kind of stuff. And it was sort of a, if you will, primitive terror tactics. Well, the Germans took umbrage at this. And after they had a couple of commanders who were a bit more sympathetic to the struggle of the Africans, they sent a guy, von Trotha, who was just, he said, we are just going to eliminate them. So he fought this war of attrition. and used heavy artillery, and indeed, you know, a huge percentage of the Herero population was killed. But was it a systematic, you know, genocide? I don't know if that word could be applied.
Well, a central element of your book is the integrated fighting force that General von Luttau put together, this Schutztruppe, the protective force. How did he do it?
Well, I mean, he first of all, he arrives in the country 8 months before the war. He personally tours the country, a vast region larger than Germany, on foot, on bicycle, often alone. He gets to know all the tribes and their various languages. He is, I would like to say, he's really a figure for another age. He's an extremely cultured person. He loved art and music. His mother had been a musician, amongst an amateur but talented musician. I mean, he sort of represents, if you will, the best of the European Enlightenment values. And he realized that the Germans, that Germany's Africa was surrounded by their enemies, that on all sides, indeed, even on the side of the ocean, the Indian Ocean, because the British Navy was dominant in that part of the world, and on one side there's British East Africa, on the other side there's the Belgian Congo, and on the third side there's the Portuguese East Africa. So he realized that if he were to fight these overwhelming forces of the enemy, he would need to enlist the native population. So he trained existing Schutztruppe, which was a small, if you will, police force, in the rigors of, you know, heavy bush fighting. He integrated German officers with them. He actually, in certain cases, had African non-commissioned officers in command of German troops. That was rare, but it did happen. And he fostered this incredible spirit of camaraderie between his German officer corps, which was about, you know, small, at one point 300, at its largest maybe 3,000, it made sure that the relations between the black troops and the white were equal. And he famously said, you know, in Africa, there is no skin color. We're all equal here. So he believed that, and he treated everybody, you know, on the basis of their merits.
He seems like a very powerful leader. I guess he got this nickname, the Lion of Africa, didn't he?
Yes, and in fact, interestingly, he's still remembered in Africa. So he's not remembered here. I you know, writers have to do a lot of things, and both to get myself out of the house one or two nights a week and for a little bit of extra cash, I actually sell tickets at a movie theater. And one of the kids there is from Burundi, which was part of German East Africa. And I asked him, I said, you ever hear of this guy, von Luttau? And he's like, oh, of course. You know, so he's still talked about in that part of the world. Whereas when I get German patrons, and we show a lot of foreign, it's an art house theater, we show a lot of foreign films, and I get German patrons, I ask them, I say, have you heard of von Luttau? And they say, no.
Robert Gowdy is the author of African Kaiser, General Paul von Luttau, Vorbeck, and the Great War in Africa, 1914 to 1918. You wrote in your book that von Luttau's operations repeatedly demonstrated, quote, in battle, numbers don't matter as much as resolve. Where did that resolve come from?
I mean, a very good question. I mean, these are, on one hand, you know, matters that are almost, you don't know, you know, you can't put your finger on it, but he came from a long line of soldiers. I mean, his family...
He was Prussian.
They were, from Prussia. They were German aristocrats, you know, small, you know, low-level German aristocrats. They could trace their ancestry back to the Teutonic Knights. His, you know, ancestors had fought with Frederick the Great. His father, you know, had been a general in the Franco-Prussian War. And, you know, they were schooled in this... You know, loyalty to the Kaiser, that was their thing. And while von Luttau was very modern in many aspects of his outlook, he was medieval in his dedication to the Kaiser.
Okay. Well, there's an important footnote to history that takes place during this great war in Africa, and that is this German dirigible, L-59, they attempted to get supplies to von Lütow. I don't think they were successful, but they set a record trying, didn't they?
I mean, there's so many interesting things happened. There was a battleship that was it was trapped up a jungle river, and it sort of inspired the African Queen book and film that you may know with Humphrey Bogart.
Oh, sure.
The famous Zeppelin L-59. So as the war went on and things went worse and worse for Germany, and pieces of the colony kept getting eaten up. Now, you've got to keep in mind that von Lettow, at this point in, say, 1917, only has about 3,000 guys left.
Wow.
He is fighting the combined forces of the British, Belgians, and Portuguese at times as much as 300,000 men.
Wow.
So he is able to keep them at bay by hiding in the jungle, by coming out and fighting. And, you know, all communication is cut off from Germany. Occasionally a message slips out. The Kaiser, who becomes increasingly obsessed with von Lettow, because he says this von Lettow is showing the true resolve of Germany, et cetera, fighting in this distant place with a handful of men. So he resolves to send supplies via Zeppelin, because they can't reach Germany's Africa by the sea. It's completely blockaded. The British now have captured the coastlines, et cetera. And so they actually do this. They build this massive super Zeppelin. They fill it with tons and tons of military supplies. And you know, being German, they design it in such a way that it is, when you get it to Africa, you can deconstruct it, use its canvas, you know, a covering to make tents, its aluminum, you know, superstructure to make buildings. The walkways are covered with leather carpeting that you can use to make boots. I mean, this is fascinating stuff. So the Zeppelin takes off in secret. Of course, nothing is secret to the British, because the British, as always, have cracked the German naval codes. They did this in World War II, famously with the Enigma machine.
Mm-hmm.
They do this in World War I via a captured German battleship, which with a scene with which I opened the book. In any case, they have cracked the German codes. They intercept these messages about the Zeppelin. And rather than trying to shoot it down outright, because they're not sure, you know, where it's coming from exactly, they pull a very British ploy, which is the Zeppelin reaches Africa, and news, I mean, at this point, it's the longest air journey ever undertaken by man. It is 2,000 or 2,500 miles from Bulgaria, which was a German base, all the way to Khartoum. In Africa, they only have about, you know, maybe 800 miles to go or something before they reach East Africa. And they get a message saying, von Lettow, via radio, von Lettow has been defeated. Turn back. And as it turns out, the message was a fake. It had been planted by the British, picked up by a German military radio transmitter in Germany, and then transmitted via that to the Zeppelin, and almost makes it, but turns back.
Robert Gowdy is the author of African Kaiser, General Paul von Lettow Vorbeck and the Great War in Africa. And this is just a sample of the story that he tells, because, of course, after World War I, he's this hero in Germany, and something else is happening in that country that he gets a bit concerned about. That's the rise of the Nazi Party. He ended up not being a favorite of Adolf Hitler. And he ends up being helped by his British enemies after World War II, as he's, you know, suffering from poverty and all that. It's a fascinating story, Robert.
I thought so. I thought it needed a newer treatment. And I mean, it must be remembered that, yes, indeed, von Lettow hated Hitler. He recognized Hitler for being a madman, and he met Hitler once, and he said, I think this is a very telling thing, he said, because Hitler had sent some thugs to ransack his office. After World War I, von Lettow was, you know, running for the Reichstag, or had been in the Reichstag for a while, and he meets Hitler and to complain, your thugs have ransacked my quarters, and he says, von Lettow says, here was a man who cared about neither justice nor injustice.
That's author Robert Gowdy talking with Prairie Public's Doug Hamilton. The book, again, African Kaiser General Paul von Lettow-Vorbeck and the Great War in Africa.